TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference and partner events. This episode features sneaker data expert Josh Luber. This talk contains powerful visuals. Download the video at TED.com. Here's Josh Luber.
This is the Air Jordan 3 Black Cement. This might be the most important sneaker in history. First released in 1988, this is the shoe that started Nike marketing as we know it. This is the shoe that propelled the entire Air Jordan lineage and perhaps saved Nike. The Air Jordan 3 Black Cement did for sneakers what the iPhone did for phones. It's been re-released 4 times. Every celebrity's been seen wearing it. There's a site about what to wear with the Black Cement. It's been right under your nose for decades, and you never look down. And right about now, most of you are probably thinking, sneakers? Yes. Yes, sneakers. Some extraordinary things about sneakers. And data, and Nike, and how they're all related possibly to the future of all online commerce. In 2011, the last time the Jordan 3 Black Cement released at a retail of $160, it sold out globally in minutes. And that's because people were camped outside of sneaker stores for days before it went on sale. And just minutes after that, thousands of those pairs were on eBay for 2 and 3 times retail. In fact, there's over 1,000 pairs on eBay right now, 4 years later. And here's the thing. This happens every single Saturday. Every week, there's another release or 2 or 3, and every shoe has a story as rich and compelling as the Jordan 3 Black Cement. This is Nike building the marketplace for sneakerheads, people who collect sneakers, and my daughter. It's an I Love Dad t-shirt. For the brands, sneakerheads are a very important demographic. These are the tastemakers. These are the Apple fanboys. Because who else is going to buy a pair of $8,000 Back to the Future sneakers? Yeah, $8,000. And while that's obviously the anomaly, the resale sneaker market is definitely not. 30 years in the making, what started as an underground culture of a few people who like sneakers just a bit too much, now we have sneaker addictions. In a market where in the past 12 months, there have been over 9 million pairs of shoes resold in the United States alone at a value of $1.2 billion. And that's a conservative estimate. I should know. I am a sneakerhead. This is my collection. In the pantheon of great collections, mine doesn't even register. I have about 250 pairs, but trust me, I am small time. People have thousands. I'm a very typical 37-year-old sneakerhead. I grew up playing basketball and Michael Jordan played. I always wanted Air Jordans. My mother would never buy me Air Jordans. As soon as I got some money, I bought Air Jordan. Literally, we all have the exact same story. But here's where mine diverged. After starting 3 companies, I took a job as a strategy consultant, where I very quickly realized that I didn't know the first thing about data. But I learned, because I had to, and I liked it. So I thought, I wonder if I get a hold of some sneaker data just to play with for my own amusement. The goal was to develop a price guide, a real data-driven view of the market. And 4 years later, we're analyzing over 25 million transactions, providing real-time analytics on thousands of sneakers. Now, sneakerheads check prices while camping out for releases. Others have used the data to validate insurance claims. And the top investment banks in the world now use resale data to analyze the retail footwear industry. And here's the best part. Sneakerheads have sneaker portfolios. Sneakerheads can track the value of their collection over time, compare it to others, and have access to the same analytics you might your online brokerage account. So sneakerhead Dan builds his collection and identifies which 352 are his. He can see it's worth $103,000. Frankly, a modest collection. At the asset level, he can see gain loss by shoe. Here he's made over $600 on one pair. I have one of those. So an unregulated $1.2 billion industry that thrives as much on the street as it does online and has spawned fundamental financial services for sneakers? At some point, I asked myself, what's really going on in the market? And two comparisons started to emerge. Are sneakers more like stocks or drugs? In fact, one guy emailed to say he thought his 15-year-old son was selling drugs and later found out he was selling sneakers. And now they use the data to do it together. And that's because sneakers are an investment opportunity where none other exist. And I don't just mean the kids selling sneakers instead of drugs. How about all kids? You have to be 18 to play the stock market. I sold chewing gum in sixth grade, blow pops in ninth grade, and collected baseball cards through high school. But cards are long dead, and the candy market's usually quite local. For a lot of people, sneakers are the only legal and accessible investment opportunity, a democratized stock market, but also unregulated, which is why the story you're probably most familiar with is people killing each other for sneakers. And while that definitely happens and is tragic, it's not nearly the epidemic some media would have you believe. In fact, it's a very small piece of a much bigger and better story. So sneakers have clear similarities to both the stock exchange and the illegal drug trade. But perhaps the most fundamental is the existence of a central actor. Someone is making the rules. In the case of sneakers, that someone is Nike. Let me walk you through some numbers. The resale market we know is $1.2 billion. Nike, including Jordan Brand, accounts for 96% of all shoes sold on the secondary market. Just complete domination. Sneakerheads love Jordans. And profit on the secondary market is about a third. That means that sneakerheads made $380 million selling Nikes last year. Let's jump to retail for a second. Skechers earlier this year became the number two footwear brand in the country, surpassing Adidas. This was a big deal. And in the 12 months ending June, Skechers' net income was $209 million. That means that Nike's customers make almost twice as much profit as their closest competitor. How's that even possible? The sneaker market is just supply and demand, but Nike has gotten very good at using supply, limited sneakers, and the distribution of those sneakers to their own benefit. So it's really just supply. Sneakerheads joke as long as it's limited and Nike, they'll buy it. Shoes that sell for $8,000 do so because they're very rare. It's no different than any other collectible market. Only, this isn't a market at all. It's a false construct created by Nike, ingeniously created by Nike in the most positive sense, to sell more shoes. And in the process, has provided tens of thousands of people with lifelong passions, myself included. If Nike wanted to kill the resale market, they could do so tomorrow. All they have to do is release more shoes. But we certainly don't want them to, nor is it in their best interest. That's because, unlike Apple, who will sell an iPhone to anyone who wants one, Nike doesn't make their money by just selling $200 sneakers. They sell millions of shoes to millions of people for $60. And sneakerheads are the ones that drive the marketing and the hype and the PR and the brand cachet and enable Nike to sell millions of $60 sneakers. It's marketing. It's marketing the likes of which has never been seen before. This isn't in any textbook. For 15 years, Nike has propped up an artificial commodities market with a Facebook-level hyped IPO every single weekend. Drive by any Foot Locker at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and there will be a line down the street and around the block, and sometimes those kids have been waiting there all week. You know those crazy iPhone lines you see on the news every other year? Nike lines happen 104 times more often. So Nike sets the rules, and they do so by controlling supply and distribution. But once a pair leaves the retail channel, it's the Wild West. There are very few, if any, legal, unregulated markets of this size. So Nike is definitely not the stock exchange. In fact, there is no central exchange. By last count, there are 48 different online markets that I know of. Some are eBay clones, some are mobile markets. And then you have consignment shops and brick and mortar stores and sneaker conventions and reseller sites and Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and literally anywhere sneakerheads come into contact with each other, shoes will be bought and sold. But that means no efficiencies, no transparency, sometimes not even authenticity. Can you imagine if that's how stocks were bought? What if the way to buy a share of Apple stock was to search over 100 places online and off, including every time you walk down the street just hoping to pass someone wearing some Apple stock, never knowing who had the best price or even if the stock you were looking at was real? That would surely make you say, of course that's not how we buy stock. But what if that's not how we have to buy sneakers either? What if the inverse is true? And what if we could buy sneakers exactly the same way as we buy stock? And what if it wasn't just sneakers? It was any similar product like watches and handbags and women's shoes and any collectible, any seasonal item, and any markdown item. What if there was a stock market for commerce? A stock market of things. And not only could you buy in a much more educated and efficient manner, but you can engage in all the sophisticated financial transactions you can with the stock market. Shorts and options and futures, and well, maybe you see where this is going. Maybe you want to invest in the stock market of things. Because if you had invested in a pair of Air Jordan 3 Black Cement in 2011, you could either be wearing them on stage or have earned 162% on your money. Double the S&P and 20% more than Apple. And that's why we're talking about sneakers. Thank you.
That was Josh Luber, recorded at TED at IBM in San Francisco, California, October 2015. For more information on TED, visit TED.com.